Chapter 48. 31st of October, 6:40 a.m. Low tide. Everyone you know is both good and bad. It's part of being human. Nana used to say that, and I think she was right. Are you okay? Trixie asks. I can see you're lost in those thoughts I know you'd rather forget. But everything will be all right now. You'll see. I don't know how to respond to that, but I am not okay. I have been hoaxed by my own memories on more than one occasion, but I have never felt this lost to myself. I feel like I just watched a scene from my past, performed with a new backdrop. It looked out of place, left there by someone else, so that the memory seemed all wrong. I've tried so hard to exchange it, to give it back. I don't want to remember what really happened that night. But then, I have always found fiction more attractive than real life. They killed me. Rose, Lily and Connor killed me, I whisper. Yes, we've had this conversation many, many times. But for reasons I don't understand, you always forget, says Trixie. There are surreal moments after any tragedy when you forget what has happened. The mind often tries to delete files it can't process. When you remember, it's as though whatever caused that grief happens to you all over again. And I feel as though I am falling. But I never really forget. I just choose not to remember. If I died that night, why am I still here? I ask. How can you see and hear me? I'm not an expert in the afterlife, but I'm guessing this has something to do with it. I look up and see that Trixie has undone the top few buttons of her shirt. I stare at the pink scar down the middle of her chest, almost exactly like my own. I was born with a broken heart too, Trixie says with tears in her eyes. They think it might be hereditary, but nobody knew about mine until I was 10. I was at school when it happened. Mrs. Milton, my bully of a PE teacher, made us do cross-country on a really hot day, around the school field and through the woods. After the first lap, I said I didn't feel well. I tried to tell her that my chest hurt and it felt like I couldn't breathe. But Mrs. Milton is one of those women who only sees what she wants to see and only hears what she wants to hear. She made me keep going even when I said I felt a bit broken. I didn't want to let anyone down, so I kept running. I collapsed beneath a huge oak tree, and it was a few minutes before one of the other girls found me. They thought I'd fainted from the heat, but then my heart stopped. The next thing I remember is waking up in the hospital 2 days later with this scar down my chest and seeing you sitting at the end of my bed, watching over me. I died that day in the woods, and I think that's why I can see you. I was only dead for a couple of minutes before an ambulance arrived, but that's when I saw you for the first time. I've been able to see and hear you ever since. It still feels as though I am falling, again and again, and nobody is ever going to catch me. Can anyone else see me? I ask. No, except Poppins the dog. She can see and hear you too. I bet she ran out to greet you when you arrived at Sea Glass yesterday. People seem to see you just before they die, like the residents in the care home you visit. I know how much you like to comfort them in their last few moments, but there have been other instances. You visited the hospital once and sat talking to a little girl who had been in a car accident. Her parents were killed in the crash, She was in a critical condition and you stayed with her until it was time for her to leave. But seeing children die made you too sad, so maybe that's why you only visit the elderly these days. We both know that Rose saw you downstairs briefly, just before she passed away. Something like remorse makes itself at home on Trixie's face. I told my mum when I first started seeing you, and she got super cross about it. She didn't believe me and said she never wanted to hear me say your name again. That's why she tipped the Scrabble board on the floor last night, because she was scared that I was playing with you. Sometimes, if she heard me talking to you, I would pretend that you were an imaginary friend. She was more comfortable with that than the idea of me talking to her dead sister, the one she threw off a cliff. I know what she's telling me is true. All the times my family ignored what I said this weekend were because they couldn't hear me. Nobody hugged me when they arrived because they couldn't see me. My family has treated me like a ghost for years because I am one. Clarity comes like one of the waves I can hear outside sea glass, crashing all around me, over me and into me before knocking me down. The lucidity of the moment cannot be ignored or forgotten. I believe it, but still can't quite accept what happened then or has happened now. But why did you kill them? I don't understand why you would do such a terrible thing. You've been crying all night, as though you were as scared as the rest of us. I was scared, and I did cry. What I did tonight was truly horrible, so of course it upset me. I'm not a monster. Trixie stares at the floor. I didn't mean to scare you. I really thought you'd figure it out once you saw the Scrabble letters stuck to the VHS tapes. Watch me, hear me, notice me, see me. Those are all the things you wanted your family to do since you died. But even before you died, they didn't really see you. And Scrabble was a game we always played together, so I thought you might guess it was me. Try not to be too sad about all of this, Auntie Daisy. Some people are ghosts before they are dead. I stare at her and notice the open suitcase on the bed again. There are some things inside that I couldn't see before. A reel of red ribbon, some Scrabble letters, including a square B made from sea glass and wood, the missing B piano key, a handkerchief with the letter B stitched onto it, a bumblebee necklace, and some pages torn from my mother's The Observer's Book of Wildflowers, buttercups, bellflowers, and bluebells. I understand now that B is for Beatrice, Trixie's full name. She was leaving clues the whole time, as though she wanted someone to know that it was her. Maybe she wanted someone to stop her. What's that? I ask, seeing something else in the suitcase. This book, she replies, picking up a battered-looking old novel. It's And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie, one of my favourites. Would you like to borrow it? No. And I meant the sheets of paper with all of our names on. Trixie smiles. Poems about each member of the family. Like the one written in chalk on the kitchen wall last night. I wrote that too. Did you like it? I've written one about everyone, except you. I even wrote a poem about myself as a little red herring. But I decided not to share them in the end. Would you like to read them? I feel as though I am staring at a monster and have to look away. But she still takes the sheets of paper and lays them out on the bed for me to see. Each page is a poem about a member of the family. I don't want to read them, but can't seem to stop myself. You said you had help. Who? I ask. I did say that. Come on, let's put you out of your misery. I follow her in stunned silence as she hurries down the staircase. But I hesitate when she walks past the cupboard beneath the stairs. The door is closed again, and Rose's body has disappeared from the hallway. I'm not as good at herding my thoughts as I used to be. They tend to come and go as they please. But the ones inside my head right now are loud and clear and frightening. I follow Trixie into the kitchen. Only a moment ago, I believed that the rest of my family were all dead. But now one of them is sitting at the table, smiling at me. Once again, it feels like I am falling. Hello, Daisy. Chapter 49. 31st of October, 6:45 a.m. Low tide. Hello, Daisy, Nana says, with a smile I spent my whole life trusting. It takes a while for me to think of anything to say, and even when I do, it isn't terribly articulate. I don't understand what is happening.
Nana can't see or hear you. Do you want me to tell her what you said? Trixie offers.
Yes, I'd like you to ask Nana if she has completely lost her bloody mind.
Did she swear?
Nana asks, and Trixie shrugs.
Daisy, you know I don't like any bad language under this roof. You must remember to use your words.
But I do understand why you might be feeling a bit upset, she says. Nana stands up from the kitchen table, careful not to disturb Poppins, asleep at her feet. I see that she is wearing a new pink and purple dress, covered in a pattern of birds. She starts to shuffle towards the sink in her pink and purple slippers.
I'll explain everything, if you'll let me, but I might just put the kettle on first. I'm a little parched, and it is officially my birthday, she adds.
Nana still has a bit of blood and brain matter in her hair, and a big bloody gash on the side of her face. She looks like a ghoul.
I'll make the tea. You two have a lot to talk about, says Trixie, going to fill the kettle.
Well, I suppose it's always best to begin at the beginning, Nana says, sitting back down in her pink and purple chair at the table. It began when Trixie told me that she could see and hear you a couple of years ago. At first, I presumed she was making it up. But then she started knowing things, things that she couldn't possibly have known unless someone had told her. I thought about all the times after you were gone, when books went missing from my library and then would sometimes turn up in your bedroom. Pages folded down just the way you used to when you couldn't find a bookmark. The clues were always there. They always are. She smiles. One day, Halloween last year, I saw Trixie playing Scrabble, and I watched the pieces move all by themselves on the board when it was your turn. But then she told me what really happened the night that you died. You told her your secret, and she told me. Nana's face darkens. That's when we started to plan all of this.
What did you think happened to me that night? I say.
Daisy wants to know what you thought happened the night she died. Trixie relays without waiting to be asked, then puts the kettle on the stove.
Nana looks so sad.
Your sisters came home from the Halloween beach party and went to bed without saying a word. Your parents and I didn't even know that you were missing until the next day. We thought you were in your room the whole time and had no idea that you had sneaked out to join them. My agent was still here. Do you remember that he gave me the Scrabble board that night? It was a birthday gift, and you played a game with him after dinner. It was the last time I saw you alive. He and I found you the following morning. Your broken little body had washed up on Black Sand Bay. The tide at the time when you fell, which was what we thought had happened at first,
should have dragged you out to sea and along the coast. But there you were, face down near the causeway, almost as though you had tried to swim home to Seaglass. The police were called and we were all questioned. They visited Connor and his father, too. That's why the silly fool killed himself soon afterwards. Mr. Kennedy found a streak of your blood on the front right headlight of his Volvo. Connor had taken the car without his dad's knowledge or permission, so Bradley Kennedy thought he'd accidentally hit you himself when driving home from the pub. He was too drunk to remember that he hadn't driven anywhere the night before, and threw himself off the cliff in a tragic case of misguided guilt. His body was never found. Even the police believed that he was responsible for your death. That's when I invited Connor to move in here for a while. His father had just committed suicide, and Rose had just dumped him, though none of us knew the real reason why, and he had nowhere else to go. I didn't know he killed you. I really wasn't sure if Connor would come when I invited him here this weekend, but I'm glad that he did. Nobody else outside of this family knows the worst things about ours, and there are some things I would prefer to take to my grave. Anyone who lives long enough starts to worry about their legacy, and I didn't much like the look of mine. The Darker family will be remembered for the right reasons now, instead of the wrong ones. Connor arriving by boat was a surprise, but I just cut the rope attaching it to the jetty once you had all gone to bed. I wondered what happened to the boat, says Trixie. She smiles, but Nana doesn't. When I first found out what really occurred the night that you died, I confided in my daughter-in-law, your mother. I invited her here to Seaglass and said there was something very important we needed to talk about. I didn't tell Nancy how I suddenly knew the truth. She was already waiting for any excuse to call the men in white coats. I just told her that I was sure. That's when she confessed that she already knew. Lily had told her, years earlier. Your mother started sobbing and revealed that one of the last doctors she took you to see in London thought you had a chance to live a longer life. It involved groundbreaking heart surgery, but she never shared that information, the choice, or the opportunity with anyone else, for reasons I still don't understand. If you'd had that surgery, everything might have been different. You might still be alive now. I know, I whisper, but Nana doesn't hear me. I was here at Seaglass when they had that conversation. That's how I knew. I remember Nana and my mother sitting at the kitchen table, drinking tea, and talking about the doctor who might have changed my life. I remember Nancy crying, I remember Nana sounding so upset, and I remember how neither of them noticed me sobbing in the corner of the room. Because they couldn't see me. They behaved as though I wasn't there. But maybe I was always here. Maybe I never left. It turned out everyone knew what really happened that Halloween, except me, said Nana. Even my son, your father. They all kept quiet to protect your sisters, the Darker family reputation and their future inheritance, which is why none of them deserved a penny of it. I am not foolish or blind. I knew that my family was selfish and unkind, but they took you away from me. Then they lied about what happened, and I could never forgive them or Connor for what they did. You were always my favourite, my darling girl. You inspired me to write my own stories. You gave me something to live for, and you made me want to be a better person. They had to pay for what they did to you. The kettle boils, and it sounds like a scream. Nana glances up at the chalk poem on the kitchen wall. Daisy Darker's family were as dark can be, When one of them died, all of them lied and pretended not to see. Daisy Darker's Nana was the oldest but least wise. The woman's will made them all feel ill, which was why she had to die. Daisy Darker's father lived life dancing to his own tune. His self-centered ways and the pianos he played danced him to his doom. Daisy Darker's mother was an actress with the coldest heart. She didn't love all her children and deserved to lose her part. Daisy Darker's sister Rose was the eldest of the three. She was clever and quiet and beautiful, but destined to die lonely. Daisy Darker's sister Lily was the vainest of the lot. She was a selfish, spoilt, entitled witch, one who deserved to get shot. Daisy Darker's niece was a precocious little child. Like all abandoned ducklings, she would not fare well in the wild. Daisy Darker's secret story was one someone sadly had to tell. But her broken heart was just the start of what will be her last farewell. Daisy Darker's family wasted far too many years lying. They spent their final hours together, learning lessons before dying. "Did you like Trixie's poem?" Nana asks, but I don't answer. "She wrote more, one about each of you, but was too shy to share them all. When I told Trixie my plan, she agreed to help me. The two of you have a lot in common, and she loves you just as much as I do. I needed to make things right for you and for her before it was too late, while I still could. I killed Frank. He was a terrible son and a dreadful father. Being the only one in the family who ever touched whiskey made him surprisingly easy to poison. As soon as your dad locked himself away in the music room, I revealed that I wasn't dead after all. I told him the whole thing with me on the kitchen floor was nothing more than a Halloween prank. We had a bit of a laugh about it. I encouraged him to drink even more of the whiskey. Then I had the piano play a pretty tune while he died choking on his own blood." Nana looks down at the floor, as though avoiding eye contact, even though I know she can't see the way I am staring at her. She wipes away a tear, and I'm relieved that telling this story is making her feel as sad as I do hearing it. "Frank was too heavy for me to move by myself, so Trixie helped me drag his body into the cupboard. Nancy was busy ransacking my studio at the time. I think she was worried I might have written about her in a new book, and you were all upstairs looking for Trixie. I was worried about people suspecting Trixie. She's always been a little too clever for her own good, so the additional red herrings seemed necessary. She stole Lily's diabetic kit, took what she needed, then left it in Nancy's bedroom for someone else to find. She sneaked out of the lounge while you were all watching old home movies and joined me in the cupboard under the stairs, locking herself inside with a spare key. Injecting herself with insulin was her own idea after Rose mentioned it at dinner, but I would never have let anything bad happen to her. We had a spare shot of glucagon in case none of you found her in time." Trixie puts a cup of tea down on the table in front of Nana. "The rest was easy," Nana says, taking a sip. "Nancy was busy looking for her missing granddaughter when I called her out into the garden. When I told her the whole thing was an elaborate Halloween joke, she got very upset. So I suggested a cup of tea. That was almost always her answer to everything. It was poisoned using plants that she grew herself here at Seaglass. She died a little later than she should have, but punctuality was never Nancy's strong point. Everyone else died on time, and they were found once an hour, just like we planned. That part was one of Trixie's ideas. She was full of them after reading so many murder mysteries. Lily killed herself by spraying her neck with perfume, which we had replaced with a deadlier poison than the one she preferred. Connor took an unfortunate topple down the stairs, then suffocated on his newspaper article. Trixie shot Rose with her own gun. I had no idea she would bring one this weekend. That changed our plans and we improvised.
Rose did nothing wrong. She was a good person, I interrupt. She helped animals and I don't understand how or why.
Did Daisy say something? Nana asks Trixie, who is frowning at me.
Trixie nods.
She thinks Auntie Rose didn't deserve to die. Rose shot ponies on the way here. Rose only liked to help people and animals if helping them was easy. Rose only ever did good things to make herself feel less bad. Rose let Lily and Connor throw you over a cliff. She witnessed something truly terrible and did nothing to stop it, then lied about it. That makes her just as bad as the rest of them.
Nana nods in agreement.
In some ways, they were all killed by what they loved the most. Frank was killed by his desire to be alone with his music. Nancy was killed by her precious plants. Rose was killed by something to do with her work, which she always put first. Lily was killed by the stench of entitlement she wallowed in. And Connor died eating his own words. Being a journalist is a privilege. The stories they tell should always be true.
Have you got any idea how crazy you both sound? I say. But Trixie doesn't reply and Nana can't hear me. There is still so much I don't understand.
At midnight, when this nightmare started, Trixie found you on the kitchen floor. Rose examined you and said you were dead. The head injury, I saw the blood. The gash on the side of your head still looks serious.
Trixie repeats what I've said, and Nana nods.
The blood and brains were thanks to Amy and Ada.
I have to think for a moment before I realise that she means her chickens. The chickens that the rest of the family ate for dinner last night.
They died naturally this week, almost as though they wanted to help with the plan. But I confess that plucking them and preparing props from their remains was horribly messy. I bought a latex gash from a joke shop in town. It peels right off, see? She says, removing it with a smile. And the grey skin was just makeup. I've always had a weak pulse, and it's not the first time Rose thought someone in this family was dead when they weren't. To be fair, I've practiced breathing very slowly when meditating. I've learned from the best at a monastery in Bhutan. I can breathe so slowly that your sister thought I wasn't breathing at all. People tend to believe what they want to. So maybe that's why the whole family were so willing to believe I was dead.
But I still don't understand why, I say. Why do it at all? And why like this?
Did she ask why again? Nana says. And Trixie nods. Nana takes another sip of tea, as though thinking very carefully about the answer. I did what I did, the way that I did it, because I wanted them all to feel the fear you must have felt before you died that night. And, if I'm going to be completely honest, because I wanted to be proud of what I was leaving behind after I'm gone. I'm proud of you and Trixie. I'm proud of all my books. But I wasn't proud of any of them. Not dealing with them before I died, it would have been selfish and irresponsible, like leaving litter on the beach. If that silly old palm reader in Land's End is correct, then I'll die when I'm 80. Today is my 80th birthday, so I didn't have very long to put things right. She adds some sugar to her tea, something I've never seen her do before, and takes another sip. I don't understand why you're still here, Daisy. Why you haven't moved on. After you died, I couldn't sleep. Sometimes it felt like I couldn't breathe, and I've struggled to draw or paint or write. Grief can change a person into someone even they can't recognize. I haven't published a new book since. I thought my agent had completely given up on me, but he still came to visit yesterday to wish me a happy birthday. We talked about you. I think he knew that you were always my favourite grandchild. I kept asking myself the same question when you were taken from my life. Where does the love go when someone dies? Their last breath disappears into the atmosphere. Their body gets buried in the ground. But where does the love go? If love is real, it must go somewhere. And maybe that's why you're still here. Because the love got trapped. I wanted to set you free. And I hoped that if I put things right, you would be. But you're still here. I so badly wish I could see you the way Trixie can. That's why I asked Connor to take a picture of the whole family last night, hoping perhaps then I might be able to see your face again. I take a step closer to the fridge, where she stuck the Polaroid photo of us all. Everyone is there. Dad, Nancy, Rose, Lily and Nana. But where I was sitting, all I can see is an empty chair. Nana continues, and I try my best to keep up. Yesterday, my agent said that the night you died, you told him that you wanted to tell your own story. Do you remember that? He said that you wanted to write a novel about the real Daisy Darker and asked if he would read it. That's what I think you need to do. She stares around the room for a moment, as though waiting for an answer. Did she say anything? Trixie shakes her head. Nana drains her cup of tea, then looks straight at me as though she really can see me. Daisy? Nana? Oh, my goodness! My darling girl, look at you! Just the same as you were before, with your plaits and your denim dungaree dress. Oh, how I've missed you! You can see me, I whisper, wondering how and why now. Nana starts to weep. Yes! I can see you, and I can hear you. And this proves I was right to do what I did, because here you are. And now we can say goodbye. Properly this time. She puts her cup down with trembling hands. That last book I wanted to write, the one about a dysfunctional family not unlike ours, I've realised it is not my story to tell. It's yours. You have to write your own story. That is the answer to everything. I can't write a book. You can and you must. I believe that telling your own story, the truth about what happened, might set you free. I wish I could be here to help you. But that palm reader in Land's End was right. I don't understand. Your mother was always the only one to take sugar in her tea. The poison I used to kill her was in the bowl. It seems to have worked more quickly on me. I just had to see you again, and I knew this was the only way to do it. I'm so sorry I didn't do more to protect you from this awful family when you were a child. I know I let you down. But everything I did tonight, I did for you. Forgive me
and take care of each other, my darling girls. You are the only good future this family ever had.
Don't go, I say, holding her hand. Don't leave me again, not yet. It feels like I'm falling once more.
I'll always be here,
she says, gently putting her other hand over my heart.
The people who truly love us never leave us. And you were never broken. In my eyes, you were always perfect. I love you from here to the moon and back 3 times and once for luck. I love you too, I whisper,
new tears streaming down my face. Nana smiles at me one last time before resting her head on the kitchen table. She closes her eyes, and I know she has gone. Poppins starts to whimper, and the ocean continues to serenade every unsettled thought inside my mind, as though trying to silence them with the relentless shh of the sea. Chapter 50. 31st of October, 6:55 a.m. Low tide. The tap of grief never turns off completely. It allows a person's sorrow to slowly drip inside them until they are so unbearably full of sadness they have no choice but to let it flow freely and pour out, drowning every other thought and feeling.
She's dead,
says Trixie with tears in her eyes.
Why would she do this?
The 80 clocks out in the hallway seem to tick more loudly than ever before. Because it was her time, I say. I think she always planned to take her own life when it was over. She could never live with what she had done. I understand why she did what she did now. But I still don't know why you went along with it. Trixie sits down at the table, on her little chair covered in stars, and she looks so small to me again. Like the child she used to be, not the woman she is growing into. Do you remember what it was like when they all realized that you were broken? Trixie asks in a quiet voice. The way they treated you? Well, it was the same for me. My mother stopped letting me go out with my friends, wrapped me up in cotton wool, and every time she looked at me, all I could see in her eyes was pity and resentment, not love. My mother and Nancy didn't think anyone else should know about my heart condition, as though it were a dirty secret, something to be ashamed of. They didn't even want the rest of the family to know. Let's be honest, they really were horrible people. All of them. Look what they did to you. They all thought I wouldn't live beyond 15. Your mother knew that you might, if she'd let that doctor try to help you. I had the surgery that you didn't. There were some complications, but the doctors think I might live until I'm 20 now. 25, if I'm lucky. And that's all I want. To live what is left of my life. I'll be 16 soon. I can leave school. I can travel the world. I just want to live while I still can. Surely you must understand that. The only people in this family who ever really loved me were Nana and you. And you're a ghost. She couldn't forgive the rest of the family for what they did to you. Neither could I. We killed them so that you and I could both be free. You shouldn't still be here. It isn't right. Nana thought your soul might have got trapped because you died on Halloween. That's why we did it tonight. I stare at her, but don't know what to say. What Nana said was true. You haven't aged, Trixie continues.
I know you can't see your own reflection, but you must be able to see that you're still wearing the same clothes you did that night. The denim dungaree dress, the stripy rainbow tights, the trainers covered in daisies. You're still a 13-year-old girl. You might be my aunt, but I'm really 2 years older than you now. I can't process her words anymore. I am trapped inside a nightmare, one in which I've been dead for years. Poppins starts to whimper again, and I want to do the same.
I might give you some space. Take Poppins for a quick walk, says Trixie, as though this were a normal day. I can see this is a lot to take in. You should have a think about what Nana said. Her theory about why you're still here might not be as crazy as it sounds. And if she was right, maybe there is a way for you to leave.
What are you talking about?
She thought you should write your own story. Think about it. Using your words is the only thing you can still do. Death isn't like the movies, at least not for you. I've never seen you walk through walls or even a door unless someone has opened it first. But you can move Scrabble letters and books and type on keyboards.
Trixie walks out into the hall.
Wait, I say. Don't leave me here alone with them. I'll be back soon, I promise, she says, attaching Poppins' lead to her collar.
The pen Nana's agent gave you the night that you died is still in your dress pocket, Trixie adds. She's right. I take out the special silver pen with four colours and find Nana's agent's business card too. I stare at his name and the address of his office in London. Perhaps writing your own story is the only way you get to escape this life. Maybe telling the truth about what happened is your unfinished business.
Nana's agent told you he'd read a story about the real Daisy Darker if you wrote it. Do you remember?
I won't be long, Auntie Daisy. Come on, Poppins.
I retreat inside the dark room of my mind, trying to develop a picture of a future that would be more appealing. But all I see is black. I rush to catch up with Trixie, but she closes the front door behind her and I can't seem to open it. She's right. I can't walk through walls. I bang on the door, but it doesn't make a sound. I peer out of the tiny round window in the hallway. It's like a porthole on a boat, and I do feel as though I am trapped on a sinking ship. My view of Trixie and Poppins gets smaller and smaller as they walk across the causeway, leaving me behind. I don't know if I'll ever be able to love my niece the way that I used to. Sometimes we love monsters without knowing that's what they are. I love this house, too. I never wanted to leave it. Until now. The 80 clocks surrounding me in the hallway start to strike 7, and the noise is deafening. I stare at the punch clock and see the faded card with my name on. The last date stamped on it says 1988. I run up the stairs to my bedroom and find Connor's laptop on the desk where he left it. The cursor is flashing on the screen, and the word that I wrote last night is still there. Boo. The letters disappear one by one and are replaced with something new. Daisy Darker. My fingers tremble when I have finished typing what I hope might be the title of my story. I feel for the business card in my pocket, take it out, and stare at the agent's name again. I wonder if I could really write a book. I wonder if I could really tell the truth. There is so much we don't know we don't know. The tide is out now and the sun is just starting to rise above sea glass, casting the sky in streaks of pink and purple. I've always thought that dawn is the most beautiful time, shining a light on the clean slate of a new day. A chance to start again. The birds are swooping and singing above the waves in Black Sand Bay, and as I look out towards the ocean, I spot a pod of dolphins in the distance. The sound of the sea is serenading what feels like my final scene. I want to be free. I wonder if anyone will ever read the story I want to write. The 80 clocks downstairs are quiet again, and I enjoy the silence as I type the first few words on the blank page. I was born with a broken heart. I spent my whole life hiding inside stories when the real world got too loud. I don't know if anyone will ever read mine. There are some stories only time will tell.
Acknowledgements. Hello, I'm Alice Feeney. Thank you so much for listening to the audiobook of Daisy Darker. I really hope you enjoyed it. Books are a bit like children for authors. We're not really allowed to have favourites, but Daisy Darker is mine. I first had the idea for Daisy in 2015, and it took me over 5 years to write her story. I wouldn't have been able to write it at all without the following people. Forever thank you to Johnny Geller for being the best agent in the known universe and one of the best humans I know. And forever thank you to Carrie Stewart, my Mary Poppins and agent extraordinaire. I don't think I can remember how to exist without these two people, and I feel very lucky and eternally grateful to have them both in my life. Thank you to Kate Cooper and Nadia Mokdad for all the translations of my novels. Seeing my books out in the world will never be anything less than magic, and Kate and Nadia are my favourite magicians. Thank you to Josie Friedman, Luke Speed, and Anna Weglin for the screen adaptations of my stories. And thank you to everyone else at Curtis Brown and ICM who do so much for me and my books, especially Viola Hayden, Kira Finnan, and Sophie Story, aka the Geller Office Book Club. Huge thanks to my editor in the UK, the one and only Wayne Brooks, and the rest of the brilliant team at Pan Macmillan. Thank you for believing in Daisy and for turning this story into such a beautiful book. And huge thanks to my US editor, Christine Koprash, and the brilliant team at Flatiron. I feel so lucky to be working with the best in the business on both sides of the pond. I'm also very grateful to all of my foreign publishers who take such good care of my novels. Thank you to everyone who helped with the research for this book, with special thanks to the loveliest vet in the land, Louise Ketteridge, for letting me shadow her at her practice. The experience changed the plot in more ways than one. Thank you to the beautiful Cornish coast for inspiring the setting of this book. I have been visiting the same secluded spot on my birthday for years, and I picture Daisy and sea glass there every time. Thank you to the librarians, booksellers, journalists and book reviewers who have all been so kind about my books. And thank you to all the book bloggers and bookstagrammers. I love seeing your beautiful pictures from all around the world. My books travel far more than I do these days, and I'm quite jealous. Thank you to my Daniel, who is my first reader, my best friend, and my favourite human. Thank you to Diggy for being the most wonderful writing companion and the best dog in the world. My final and biggest thank you is to you, my readers. I wouldn't be here without you. This book is for you.
We hope you've enjoyed this production of Daisy Darker, a Macmillan Audio production from Flatiron Audio. Production supervised by Michelle Altman. Text copyright 2022 by Alice Feeney. Production copyright 2022 by Macmillan Publishers International Limited. All rights reserved.